Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ted from TedTeaches.com, and I'm really excited to be bringing this information your way because today I will be sharing with you the process that I use to build a really strong referral system through veterinarians and vet clinics. I know how massively beneficial it's been for my business, and I'm going to share that with you today. So I find oftentimes dog trainers will be a little bit scared about walking into a vet clinic, and it can develop a little bit of anxiety in people, and it can be a little bit of a scary thing to do for some people. And I understand that. Now, a lot of times what will happen is people will believe that because they have walked into the clinic and have handed, cards or put them on the shelf next to, let's say, a dozen other dog trainers' cards, oftentimes they'll believe that they've done all that they can do, or maybe they baked some cookies and they brought them into that clinic. Now, I'm in no way trying to say that those are bad things to do, but the process that I'm going to share with you today is a lot more involved, and it will increase your likelihood of being able to get referrals from that clinic times, 100. So let's get right into it. So the first thing I want you to do is really focus on visualizing what you could potentially get out of actually utilizing this process. You really need to trust the process because it is a process that works really, really, really well if you invest the time into actually doing it. Now, what I want you to visualize I'm handing you a big duffel bag full of money. Let's say there's $50,000 in that duffel bag. I want you to focus on that $50,000 and realize that that's what I'm offering you right now. In fact, I'm actually offering you a bag that's twice that size with twice that much money in it. Now, the thing is, you're actually going to put in the time and you're actually going to do the work if you believe that you're actually going to get something really beneficial out of it. You look at it a different way. When I was going to ask my wife to marry me, I was kind of stressed out about it. What if she says no? I would be heartbroken. But I knew that if she said yes, being able to spend the rest of my life with the person that I love and, having a family and being able to live together would be such a huge payout, I was willing to actually do something that stressed me out. So if you visualize the fact that you can really take your business to the next level, if you trust the process, that's exactly what you'll be able to do. I, in my first year of working at Vet Referrals, was making more than $50,000 off of one specific clinic as far as how much they were sending me for referrals. That's just one clinic. And I'm going to show you that entire process so that you can do that as well. Okay, so let's just briefly talk about the hierarchy of referrals. I believe that when it comes to referrals, there's a hierarchy. So for example, veterinarians typically are at the top. So your average pet owner is going to look at the referral that they get from their veterinarian, and they're going to see it very, very highly ranked. There's going to be a lot attached to that, because most of those pet owners are going to believe that their veterinarian knows what's best for their pet. And in some cases, obviously they do. In some cases, they probably don't. But regardless, there is a lot of power behind the referral from a vet clinic. Not only that, the referral from anybody at the vet clinic seems to have a lot of hierarchy associated with it, which is great. So a vet technician or somebody who works at the front desk, they tend to have a lot of credibility when it comes to actually referring somebody to a dog trainer or any other type of a service. Now, you can also remember, too, that there's different types of referrals. So if you meet somebody in the park and they refer you to somebody, that will potentially steer you in that direction, but it's probably not going to have as much relevance to, a veterinarian referring to their client that they should go see a specific trainer. That's why I've spent so much time focusing on getting referrals from veterinarians, because the vast majority of people who get a referral from a veterinarian will absolutely give you a call. One of the things oftentimes dog trainers forget is the fact that veterinarians absolutely need us. They need somebody to be able to refer to. You know, I don't think there's any veterinarian on the planet that wants to medicate a dog if they believe that that dog could actually thrive by getting some dog training, for example. You know, oftentimes they will be focusing on a puppy coming in thinking, well, you know, this puppy is a little bit nervous. They could really do with, you know, maybe some private one-on-one training to start the puppy out and then transitioning into a puppy class. So remember that when you are working at building your referral system, this is actually something that they absolutely need. You know, I need veterinarians. I obviously have my own dogs, and I need veterinarians that I will be able to trust to be able to send my clients to. If I've got a client that just signed up 2 weeks ago and they have a 115-pound male Akita who's human aggressive, I'm going to need a veterinarian to refer that client to, because not all veterinarians are actually going to want to actually see a dog like that. So they need us and we need them. So as I talked about briefly before, it's not good enough to just walk into a clinic and put cards on their shelf and hope that they're going to start referring to you. Even, you know, baking fresh goods and bringing them in typically is not going to be a big enough relationship where they'll actually trust you and know that you're really good at what you are going to be doing. You also have to keep in mind that the vast majority of people that they are referring to and the people that will actually be educating these veterinarians and staff are people who have really large budgets. Okay, we're going to talk about what a lunch and learn is moving forward. And typically the people who are doing lunch and learns have really large budgets, and just bringing in some baked goods every once in a while or coming in and leaving cards is typically not even something that is going to register for a lot of these veterinarians. So what is a lunch and learn? Well, a lunch and learn is typically going to be a mini seminar that will be usually about an hour in length. I've done lunch and learns in the past that were more than an hour and a half, even more than 2 hours, but typically you want to keep it to about 1 hour. Now, of course, you're going to want to cater your hour of time specific to what you do on a day-to-day basis. What's your passion? Do you train puppies all day long, or do you work with obedience situations? Do you rehabilitate aggressive dogs? We're going to talk a lot about that moving forward in this audio program, but for right now, I really want to focus on being unique. Having something that's different is really important. You have to remember that the vast majority of lunch and learns that are actually held, most of these lunch and learns are held once a week. Some clinics will do them bi-weekly, but most of them are actually once a week. So because they're doing them once a week, most times there are people coming in that are from pharmaceutical companies, pet food companies, and it becomes a little bit draining for a lot of the staff members. They tend to not be very interactive. They tend not to be a whole lot of fun. And that's actually where we can really start to make a huge relationship there, is by making it fun and interactive and engaging. Okay, so I guess the big question is going to be, now that we know what a lunch and learn is, how do we actually get the lunch and learn? So typically what I will do is about 4 drop-ins. I like to use the concept of playing hard to get. Usually what I would suggest doing is, on your first drop-in, have no branding, no hat on, no, you know, shirt with a logo on, anything like that. And either bring in one of your dogs, or if you have access to a client's dog, or, you know, even a client that has a puppy, if you can somehow be able to bring them out and to take them around to different clinics, that is one of the best things that you can do. Walk into the clinic just like an average person and just start training this puppy, bust out some food, bust out some treats, and have a lot of fun with this puppy. I personally train place with every one of my clients' dogs, which is basically just showing the dog to jump onto a boundary and wait there until I release them. And it's awesome if you can bring a dog in and just have them jump onto the scale, for example, get a quick weight and then come off. Veterinarians, anybody in a vet clinic loves seeing people come in and being proactive. So that's number one. Just walk in, don't say anything to anybody, just do a bit of training and walk out. By your second drop-in, at this point, I might be wearing like my business shirt or maybe a hat, but I want to keep the branding kind of low-key. Again, I want to keep them kind of thinking, who is this person walking in here? And why do they keep bringing this puppy in here? What's the deal? So again, I walk in, I have fun, I just do my thing. I typically won't start any type of, you know, conversation or anything like that unless they ask me. And I just walk out, and that's basically it. By the third drop-in, I actually start talking to people. The vast majority of the time, they're going to start talking to me. They're going to be asking me, hey, why are you bringing this dog in here every couple of days? You know, are you a client here? And they're going to start asking you things. You know, it can slip out that you're a dog trainer and you're just helping out one of your client's dogs while they're at work. And they you knew that the puppy had to get out for a walk in midday. You know, you can play a lot of different ways, or you can just chat with them and be real and let things go from there. So typically by the third drop-in, I'm starting to build a bit of a relationship. By the fourth drop-in, I actually do the ask where I'm trying to get the lunch and learn. Now, it's really important that you understand, you may have been building a relationship with the front desk staff, and the front desk staff does not book the lunch and learns, okay? So you have to remember that you have to contact the office manager. If the office manager is not there, you want to make sure that you get their name and phone number so that you can contact them afterwards. And hopefully the front desk staff will actually give you some sort of a referral to the office manager if they're not actually there. Oftentimes what I'll do too is I'll have a little notepad with me and I'll write down names and what the people look like so that I can remember as I'm going in. I don't have a really good memory, so I like writing down names and little, you know, jotting down little things, you know, this person was about this height, had brown hair and green eyes, and her name was such and such. Writing down those little notes can actually be really beneficial so that you can remember their names and so that you can continue to build that relationship with them. At this point, usually they will be asking me, so what's your deal? Why do you keep coming in here? And you've got a bit of a rapport with them. Usually at that point, you can talk to them about the fact that you do a lunch and learn. It's free of charge. You come into the clinic. I always provide pizza and drinks, you know, water and juice and sometimes soda and different things. And if the office manager is not there, you can have a letter with you that will basically walk them through everything. Of course, with this audio program, you will be getting a PDF that will give you kind of a step-by-step of everything that you need to be doing. I will also include with that the letter that you can take in with you. Of course, if you want to change that and tweak that and put your name and your information in there, obviously that would be beneficial, but I will include that with you. And if the office manager is not there, then they can leave that there so that you can book that lunch and learn. Of course, if they're not there, you want to be able to get that name and phone number, as I mentioned before, so that you can contact them and you can book that lunch and learn. Now, you have to figure out what your lunch and learn is actually going to be on to be able to figure out if they are actually going to want to have you come in and do a lunch and learn, or maybe it would be more fitting for you to provide content or value for their clients. This is something that you might want to be focused on as well too. What is it that you could potentially do for their clients? The vast majority of people who work in vet clinics have enough humility to know that they don't know everything about dogs. If you're providing a lunch and learn seminar that teaches how to read dog body language better, for example, then the vast majority of those clinics are going to say, I want in, I know you, I trust you, I like you, this is great stuff, and I want you to come in and do a lunch and learn. But there may be a clinic that decides, you know what, we don't really want you to come in. We're kind of booked up for a while. Why don't you put something together for our clients? And now, obviously, you're going to have to figure out what that's actually going to look like. Whether you do a seminar for their clients who just got puppies, you're going to have to figure out what that looks like. And there's endless options of things that you can do as far as that's concerned. if they don't have a lot of access to actual space, I typically will do this in a relatively small room. I don't need a lot of room to do the lunch and learn. But if they don't have any space in the back, or if they don't have a lunch room or anything, you could potentially book a restaurant close by that's in the area and buy everybody lunch and just say, you know, call ahead and say, I'm bringing 10 to 15 people during a lunchtime and book that time away. And maybe that's an area where you could do that if you don't actually have room in the clinic. Okay, so we're going to assume that you've booked your first lunch and learn and you are ready to go. You've showed up, you've got your pizza and your drinks and everybody's eating, and you start introducing yourself. Who are you? What's the company that you work for or you own? Typically, what I'll start to talk about here is the type of training that I do, the type of tools that I use, the type of methodology that I'll use. And, you know, I really focus a lot of my training on food-based training, so I end up talking a lot about that. And I explain some of the methods that I use. I bring a lot of the tools with me, and I try to make things as interactive as I can. I'll never forget the time I went to a seminar a while back and they were doing kind of an interactive approach on getting people to understand what free shaping is. If you don't know what free shaping is, it's essentially something that you'll do in dog training where you kind of keep the dog guessing as far as what you want them to do, and you kind of play this game of hot and cold. It's really interesting to see people do it with dogs. It's something that I do with my dogs just to keep them thinking and just to make myself a better trainer. And it can be a lot of fun, but that's something that you can actually do with people. It's a game that you actually train with people. So at this seminar that I was at a while back, they were doing this game, essentially showing people how to do free shaping, and they were doing it with people and they were using a clicker to communicate, you know, the marker that they were trying to give to the dog to let them understand what they were doing was correct. So making things interactive, there's a lot of different things that you can do. And just remember, it should be fun, it should be interactive, because they're probably used to something kind of cold and sterile and monotonous, and the more interactive you make it, the better. Now, I always focus on communicating the fact that I'm really, really invested in prevention. I truly believe that if you start your puppy out in the beginning, then a lot of these issues are not actually going to manifest over time. So obviously, that's not always going to happen with all clients and all dogs. Even preventing bites from happening by using a muzzle and different things, I really focus on educating the staff on the fact that I'm really focused on preventing a lot of these things, because that's going to help my clients, but that's also going to help the vet that's actually going to have to treat these dogs. Realistically, they want to know that I'm making their life easier trying to prevent a lot of these issues from popping up and making it easier on them when the dogs actually do come into the clinic. So typically what I'll talk about next is some of the programs that I actually do and the prices for my programs. If you have a relatively highly priced program, don't worry about it. That's not a big deal. Most veterinarians are used to this. You know, they have a lot of overhead. Their prices typically are, you know, they're decent prices for the fact that veterinarians are providing an amazing service to, you know, prevent their dogs from getting sick or for patching them up when they, you know, need stitches or something like that. So usually higher prices are not anything that are going to deter a veterinarian from referring you or anybody within that clinic. They are just going to want to know what your prices are so that they're not sending somebody your way that they know is not going to invest in a really solid, good program that is going to cost $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 as far as your programs are concerned. So make sure that they understand some of the programs that you utilize and the prices that are going to be charged, because they're going to want to know that so they can pass that information on to potential clients. Now, if you are an in-home dog trainer, you also really want to focus on communicating that with the staff, because I'm no longer an in-home dog trainer. I have a facility and my clients come to my facility. It's a lot less driving for me. It's a lot safer because I work with so many reactive and aggressive dogs. People come onto my property and there's a very specific system and procedures, making sure that everybody's going to be safe. But focusing on the fact that you're an in-home trainer is a really big deal, and that can give you a really big edge on somebody that's not an in-home trainer. If you're communicating with the staff at this clinic to say, hey, we are an in-home dog trainer, we go to our clients' houses and we do the training with them right then and there, that's actually a really big positive, and I would really be playing that up. Okay, at this point, you also want to be focusing on what are you actually going to give them as far as content and value. And obviously, that is going to be specific to what you are going to be good at. I can't tell you what you should be teaching them. I can only tell you that I have specifically been doing my lunch and learns on how to safely handle reactive and aggressive dogs. They've been super well received over the years, and I've had a lot of people be very, very thrilled with the information that I provide. I bring a lot of muzzles and different leashes, and I show them some different techniques to help them keep safe. I really focus a lot on setting up a system and procedures so that they understand that this is something that they can have in their clinic. I can only speak to my local clinics, but the vast majority of them do not have a system and procedure set up as far as the moment somebody calls them to book the dog in to be seen, and when the dog actually leaves, there's no system. So oftentimes that leaves people in a compromising situation where they could potentially get bitten because something is not actually defined. So I really distill it down for them. I show them, okay, these are the things that you should be asking on the phone. These are the things and the stipulations that you should be making right from the beginning. Make sure that before they even bring their dog into the clinic, the dog is wearing a very tightly fitted collar, or you could give them a slip lead just to make sure the dog isn't going to be able to pop out of that collar and potentially bite somebody or going after another dog. Looking for different signs that the owners are stressed out or signs that the dog is stressed out. There's a lot of different things that we can actually set up to minimize liability and people being bitten within the clinic. And I really focus my lunch and learn specifically on that because I think that safety is paramount when you're working with dogs. And unfortunately, most clinics don't actually have something set up like that so that all staff knows exactly what the expectations are the moment a dog walks into the clinic. So once you've actually done your lunch and learn, you've been interactive, you've had a lot of fun, everybody's learned some things, maybe you've had a quick question and answer period. I'd like to bring in a dog, definitely at this point, and potentially several different dogs. People who work in these clinics love animals, and it just brings everything together. I usually do some tricks. They get to see that my dogs are very well trained, very well socialized, and it tends to give me a lot more credibility because I just have really nice, well-trained dogs, and that can give me a lot more credibility. It's typically about this time when you're going to find most of the veterinarians are going to be asking you at this point, well, do you have any cards? We want to be able to refer to you. And this is something that has changed over the years. I used to have a big display that I would give to my veterinarians, and I found that within about a month to 2 months, it would no longer be at the front desk. And, you know, realistically, that is very valuable real estate. So what I've done now is I'll just take stacks of about 20 to 30 business cards, put some elastic bands around them, and I'll usually provide the clinic with about 6 to 10 of those stacks of cards. The front desk staff can just keep them underneath the desk, you know, behind the computer. The veterinarians can put them actually in their drawers, and they can take them out when they want to refer to somebody. But the vast majority of clinics, if you do your job correctly, if you make it interactive and you make it fun and you keep people engaged, they're going to be asking you for business cards so they can refer to you. And of course, that's a two-way street. You also want to be helping them if they're going to be helping you. So you've done your lunch and learn, you've started building your relationship, and this is not where it ends. Again, it's a relationship, so look at it like a marriage. You got to be investing time, you got to do the work. That's the most important thing. I found a really nice sweet spot at about 1 month per visit. I would usually go in about once per month, make sure that they have business cards, you know, make sure that I'm just chatting with people. I'll always bring my pen and paper with me, my notepad, making sure that I'm writing down names if there's staff members that have changed there, just to, so that I can continue the relationship on there and just, you know, going in, seeing if I can help with anything and just making sure that I'm continuing to be known within that specific clinic. Because oftentimes in the clinics, the staff members will change, especially the front desk staff and the vet technicians. Never, ever underestimate the power of the person at the front desk. Not only that, the power of the vet technicians, the people that may be taking the dog into the back. If you have those people on board, those people typically will actually give you more referrals than the veterinarians. I don't understand it. I don't know, but typically, there is a lot of referrals that come from the people at the front desk because they're making conversation, they're catching up with people, and those people oftentimes are kind of the point person, the people that they really get to build a strong relationship with rather than the veterinarians who typically are not going to have as much time to sit around and chat because most of them are quite busy and have to get to the next appointment. Once you have a relationship built with a clinic, you can put together some sheets that you can actually fax in. So training sheets. So if you have a client that's going to a specific veterinarian, you could put together a training sheet just to keep everybody in the loop with how training's going, when you started training. And that can be another really good way just to make sure that the veterinarians know that they're training with you, what you guys have been working on, and so forth. Definitely, you want to also be remembering to communicate with your clients to be telling their veterinarians that they've been working with you. You know, that goes a really long way. Oftentimes, veterinarians, you know, they have a lot on their minds and they oftentimes won't really ask what dog trainers that their clients have been working with. They've got a lot of things going on. So having the client just bring it up, you know, in passing can be very, very beneficial to keep that relationship going. But not only that, that can also be a really big catalyst in actually starting to build that relationship before you do a lunch and learn. Okay, so let's do a quick recap. The first thing that we talked about is we gotta get over our fear. If we're fearful that we may be, you know, investing our time or our resources in the wrong place, or maybe we believe that we've actually tried this, we've brought some business cards in already and it never really went anywhere, we have to get over our fear because this is a very wise investment in the time and the money that we're gonna put into this. Trust me and trust the process. It does work. We also talked a little bit about booking the lunch and learn. That's a whole process, and you really need to take your time in building those relationships. I cannot emphasize that enough. So what are we actually teaching on? We have to have kind of a curriculum so that we can go in there with a specific theme. That I'm definitely going to be leaving up to you because that's something that you're going to have to figure out on your own. Because you are going to specialize in something that may or may not be something that I specialize in. And once we've actually built that relationship and we've done our lunch and learn, we have to continue to follow up. Follow up about once a month, make sure everybody's got cards, make sure that if they have any questions, anything is answered, let them know that if they need anything, you'll be there for them. And that is really important. Remember, it is a relationship and you need to continue to follow up. And there you have it. Step by step, that is how to build a referral system from veterinarians. I know it's been super beneficial for my business. I hope that it is for you, and I hope that you put in the time and do the work and reap the benefits from it. Within this audio recording, you will also have access to a PDF checklist that will give you a step-by-step of everything that you need to be doing. Just so that if you weren't taking notes, you won't have to worry about that. As well within that, you will also have access to the letter that I use to book the lunch and learn. And of course, make that your own. Again, I hope you found this audio program to be beneficial. I hope that it helps you and helps your business. This is Ted Efthymiadis with TedTeaches.com.